To data, warp speed, please.
Hour 8 of the Trekmate Polyvon.
And now, from the west coast of the United States of America, in the studios of Boyer Multimedia, the founder and creator of StarTrekParodies.com, musician and voiceover artist Rick Moyer.
Yeah, I'm still here. Wayne, I should have never told you I would do this song. It is a pain in the back end. What a cool challenge, though, I tell you. I'm doing the parody of Party Rock as Party Spock Anthem, and it's been quite a chore to sing the song. It's a difficult song. Lots more difficult than I thought. And so I've been very busy quite a bit of the day working on this, and I think you're going to like the end result once I get it all put together. But it will be different, I can tell you that already. You want to hear some of it? Okay. Let's see if I can get it to work. The harmony parts are the parts that are the most difficult to do. But I can show you kind of what I do here when I get into it.
In the booth, Party Spock, looking to ride that geeky jug, huh? Non-stop GPS to spot, checker sets the course like it's all he's got. The skin is green and any lag, sad shirt, brown car.
All right, we don't want to reveal too much here.
Let's go! Party Spock is on the ship.
What's funny is, watch this.
Everybody have a logical time. And he's going to make you use your mind. Everybody make the Vulcan sign.
What do you think? That's without the music, huh?
Tonight, everybody have a logical time. And he's going to make you use your mind.
What was the most difficult part of the song? In the middle. I actually had Amy do parts of the song. The girls' parts, which you'll laugh at because she does the cool echo. And you'll hear the funny part of it coming up, but I'm not going to play it yet. I want to play this part, though. This was the most difficult part to do. And don't ask me why, but it was. But it's in the middle of the song, and it goes like this. I'll play it without the music for you. You'll laugh. Well, I mean, here it comes.
Shuttling. Beam up fast, and be the first one to make me share this glass. Rob your nail, don't be mad. Now stop. Emotions are bad. Trouble is up ahead.
Hello, gentlemen.
Don't mess around.
We just want to
explore now.
What have I done?
You're cruising now.
Am I supposed to be talking now? I thought my mic was supposed to be muted.
Now the music comes in, and you can hear it.
Yeah, please mute.
That's all I'm going to play for you, though, right now, because there's a little bit more to do. And, of course, now what I do is after I get the song to mix to where I like it, excuse me, then what I'll do is I'll go and get some sound bites of Spock, because this song is particular about Spock. And I do put clips into my songs because, as a geek, I love hearing the clips of the shows and the characters that I'm covering. And so I went out and got several clips, made some of my own, got some from other places, and I will be playing those clips within the song, and I make it hilarious. So that's my progression so far. The next time you hear it will be the actual song that that they play for you. Trekmate, you guys are awesome, and this is a really cool pod-a-thon. I hope lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money is being raised for charity. I think that's so cool of you guys. You're really actually making this world more like the world of the Federation, where the people don't have to worry about needs being met because their needs are met. There's no poverty, no sickness. How cool is that? I would love that to be our world that we live in today, and it's not. But we can sure do something cool like this and help out. So I think that's really cool. Okay, so that's my report. I'm now putting the clips in to the places where they need to go in the song, and then I'm going to mix it down, and then you're going to hear brand new, before anybody else, you're going to hear a brand new parody song from Rick Moyer. That's me! Sounds logical, doesn't it? Okay, everybody, have a good one. I'll see you in a little bit when we play the Party Spock Anthem.
I'm getting something on the distress channel.
Make it so. Make it so. Make it so. Make it so.
Yes, and we're back. I'd just like to take this opportunity to welcome back JD from the Wilderness.
Hello, mate.
And to also welcome our guests, Oren and Bob from All Things Trek.
Hello.
Hello, how's it going, guys?
Not too bad so far. How's the podcast been going? You guys have been doing this for what, like 8 hours already?
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the eighth hour, so it's going well. It's going well. We've been finding that we've been slightly running behind, but behind schedule, but still.
Well, that'll happen.
We've got 24 hours to fill.
Yeah, when you're doing 24 hours, I was listening to the tail end of the Larry Nemechek interview, and I was really enjoying it. Although he mentioned that they thought the problem with the 2009 movie was that it didn't have the Heart of Roddenberry in it. And I was just like, no, the problem with the 2009 movie is that the plot doesn't make any sense. That's the problem. You had great characters and great effects, but your plot is ridiculous.
This much is true.
Your supernova is going to destroy the galaxy, and then you have your villain saying, "Hi, Chris, I'm Nero." It's like, no, guys, that's not how you write villains.
Yeah.
I've been to college. I know this sort of stuff.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. It never quite, it always baffled me a little bit that they decided that the destruction of Romulus's star could destroy a whole sector.
But it's not Romulus's star. It's a different star. It's the Hobus star. That is not even in the Romulus system. It's like somewhere else.
I just want to point out real quick that, Oren, it took you no more than 45 seconds to immediately start raging about something that was Star Trek related the moment we get on here.
It's not my fault. It was the previous interview. They started it.
Yeah, blame Larry. He's not here to defend himself.
Mr. Nemechek is great. And as we're running behind schedule, really, can you put a schedule on saving the lives of children? I don't think we can.
No, and yeah, that raises a great point. That is why we're here, guys. We're here to raise money, as much money as we can, for two very worthy charities, for the Watford General Hospital Special Care Baby Unit, who do amazing work every day, make a real difference to people's lives, like they did for mine and my wife when they saved our daughter. So,
so you have a very personal connection then, definitely.
Yes. No, we had our first child last year, and unfortunately we had complications during birth, and our daughter totally flatlined. So they really did save her. She ended up spending a week in the special care baby unit, and the staff there were absolutely fantastic. I can never repay the debt that I owe these people, but by doing something like this, it's taking small steps. So if you guys can find it in your heart to just dig deep and give what you can, we really appreciate it.
Do we have a running total right now? How much has been donated?
I will double check the total, just make sure there has been no more donations since. But at the moment, we stand at, waiting for the internet to load, £632.
That's amazing.
So
that's respectable. I think we can do better. After Heaven certainly knows that when we are done with this show, I will chip in my bit.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And don't forget, guys, we are running competitions throughout the event, and whoever does donate the most money at the end of the day will walk away with a brand new iPad, which has been donated by Paul Drinkwater. So He's not just some shoddy old iPad 1 or 2, it's the new iPad. So please, we want to thank you for your generous donations, so keep them coming in.
And if you use the iPad and you like sit in front of your window as the sun is coming up, you can imagine that you are on the bridge of the new Enterprise as the sun gets right in your eyes.
Sorry, you can have your very own lens flares.
That was maybe a little obscure.
No, it was fine. It's all right.
My favorite thing about lens flares is that used to be something you tried to avoid, because that was like when the sun got in the camera and it was no good, and you weren't supposed to have that. You'd get fired for having lens flares in your movie.
I never understood that with 2009. It's like, no, you're just reminding me that there's a camera.
Although, to be honest, the lens flares aren't really something that bothered me while I was watching the movie. I was just like, whatever. Everything's bright. Everything was so bright that I was just, this is a very I did like the 2009 movie for the record. So the lens flares are only something that are cheap shots that I like to make afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I think we all like to take a few digs at the lens flares.
Except you. I don't know about you, man, but I was pretty vocal about that on our particular show. We were talking about it. So, and we've definitely made more than a few comments in regards to lens flares and the general feeling of the movie and such over on our own podcast, All Things Trek. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of guys have.
We haven't. We talk about it tonight, so.
Oh, well, why aren't you doing your civic Star Trek duty?
Yeah, you're not a real podcast until you make fun of it.
No, not. We're really not at the best of times.
No, I like this podcast. I've been listening to it at work, and I've also listened through 10 Forward. I haven't gotten to the other ones yet, but one of these days, you guys have so many podcasts. Eventually, I will have listened to all of them.
Yeah, we've got a few going. Well, within the next few weeks, we would have one on every day of the week at the moment. So, yeah. All right. There's something to cater for all tastes.
I think we did promise that we were going to talk about the best and worst aliens of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Does someone want to start, or shall it be me?
Oh,
yes.
Do we want to start with best or worst?
I'll start with my best ones. Okay. So my favorite alien race in Star Trek, like just straight up, has got to be Vulcans. Except Enterprise. Enterprise Vulcans don't count. But not Enterprise Vulcans. I really, really like Vulcans. Obviously, Spock is amazing, and I just love the entire idea of them with having, like, the idea of them having these extremely volatile emotions that they have to suppress, otherwise they would just be, you know, unstoppable rage machines. I really like that idea. I really like the mind meld. I think they did a really good job with that in a lot of episodes. And I really like some different actors' takes on Vulcans. One of my favorite Vulcans actually is from Enterprise. I don't remember the name of that episode, but it's the one where they meet a Vulcan diplomat who has been accused of some crime, and they have to transport her back to Vulcan. And I really liked the way that actress played an older, more mature Vulcan. I thought it worked very well.
With the Vulcans, I think it's it really is an interesting thing. So, as a species, to have such volatile emotions, they almost drove them to the brink of destruction. Until Sarek actually found ways of like controlling them and promoting the logical philosophies.
And I really liked the episode. I can't remember the name of it, but the one where Picard infiltrates that mercenary ship that's going around collecting Vulcan. What's it called?
Gambit. Gambit. Part one and part two.
Yeah, I really liked the payoff at the end of that with the Vulcan psychic weapon.
Yes.
I thought that was a really neat idea, and it was just cool to see more. Sorry, what?
Sorry, that Vulcan weapon, right? I've got a quick nitpick to that. They're all like, get all the aggressive thoughts out of your mind and whatnot so it won't work. How the hell did Worf do that? He's a Klingon.
I've always felt that...
That Worf is a racial stereotype, sir, and I find that offensive for all Klingons out there.
It's true, though. I've always believed that Worf, with the prop, is, you know, when he's written well, is a very controlled character. Obviously, this is not season one of TNG Worf, when he like growled at everything and wanted to shoot holes in the view screen and stuff. But, no, like later.
Come on, getting rid of all aggression and thought out of your head completely. I just always found it odd that at that one moment Worf's going to be like the Zen Klingon.
Yeah.
Well, there's a difference between being an aggressive individual who can hold their aggression but still have that aggressive thought versus being a disciplined individual. Worf had a very subtle transformation that really became apparent about, I think, season 5 of Star Trek TNG, where he did become, was at first, you know, very much this, Captain, we need to go to real alert, or, oh, Captain, it's got to be red alert, you got to get the phasers online, and pretty much anything that moved that was out in space. But by the time we get to, you know, season 5, season 6, season 7, Worf has definitely matured as a character. So it's not really that unbelievable to think, you know, that Worf would have the discipline at that point to go ahead and shove that kind of stuff out of his mind just because of his character arc through TNG.
I imagine he put himself in the same mindset he had. He had to like walk calmly towards this phaser that's about to explode and disarm it. I imagine he became very focused on something.
Yeah. He was thinking about puppies or something equally serene.
Or prune juice. Who knows? So my nitpick with that weapon is that it's very slow, and if someone had just, you know, quick drawn a phaser, she would have been you know, a little bit unlucky. She would have had some problems. I would have liked it if they'd had a little shot of someone trying to do that and showing that it was also a shield. That would have been nice. But that's my nitpick with it. I also really like Klingons. When they're written well. When they're written badly, they go on the other list of the worst race, because they can be written really badly. But you could say that about a lot of races. Someone else. Who else likes races in Star Trek?
I want to point out the least thought out race in the universe.
Oh, yeah.
Episode of Voyager. It's from Ashes to Ashes. It's the one with Ensign Lindsay Ballard when she died, and this other species reproduced.
Those guys.
How did that evolve before they were a spacefaring species? I just did not think it through.
A wizard did it. Okay.
It was
cute. That explains a lot of Voyager anyways, that a wizard did it.
I always thought that species was just not thought through at all.
You want to know a species that wasn't thought through in the way they reproduce? The Ocampa. Every Ocampa can have one child ever, and assuming the males can also have children, which we're pretty sure they can't, but assuming they could, they would still die out as a species in a couple of generations.
That's right.
Which is only about 15 years.
And you know what? That would not be a bad thing. If ever there was a race that needed to be extinct, I think it was the Ocampans.
Yeah, the Ocampa were just really... I don't know what they were thinking with that. I mean...
Interesting concept. Like, terrible execution.
It's like they introduced this race that only lives 9 years. That race should be so different from humans. Everything they do should be different. And Kes was basically like one of the blander characters on the show, which is
saying something.
Yeah. I mean, I guess she wasn't like Harry Kim level of blandness, but like someone who lives 9 years, I would expect her entire thing to be like, what new thing can I do today? What can I do today? She would just like live life.
She would have been like an excited puppy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that would have been annoying. I don't know.
Orin, you think it's just three-dimensional human terms.
I do think it's three-dimensional. Speaking of which, why did they bring up the lady who they say was assimilated at Wolf 359? Like, why didn't they just say she was one of the 18 crew members that was taken off the Enterprise? In Q2, they could have had that same link back to Next Generation without having to somehow explain how a Borg got from a ship that had exploded into Unimatrix Zero. What's up with that? Why?
Because they wanted to make life hard for themselves.
I suppose.
I want that soundbite. We're done here. I want that soundbite. Because they wanted to make life hard for themselves. So that's been my evening so far. We'll see what else happens, but so far that's top on the list.
The thing is, they were probably sitting there and thinking, how can I annoy a bunch of geeky guys that are going to be broadcasting their thoughts to random people in 15 years?
By so. Completely destroying the Borg as a species and a concept.
Yeah, that would do.
And that, it's what they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Voyager really did totally. It didn't only defang the Borg. It kind of like ripped out their entire jaw.
Yeah, pretty so much.
Here's the thing about the Borg that I don't understand at the end of Voyager is I'm not entirely sure if the implication is that the entire collective is destroyed, like there just aren't Borg anymore, or if the implication is supposed to be that the Borg survived, because if they did, all the Borg should have 29, or excuse me, not 29, but future Janeway Batmobile armor. Because they assimilated it. So if there are any Borgs still left, they have that technology. So I hope future Janeway is happy with herself.
Yeah, she got a crew home, but she screwed everyone else.
She destroyed the rest of the galaxy.
Wasn't that sort of Janeway's like modus operandi? Like my favorite example of that is in Equinox when she just gets all up on her high horse and is yelling at Ransom for, you know, killing these aliens to make fuel. And if you rewind about two seasons, you get to Scorpion, and she's like, I will give the Borg bioweapons that they can use to wipe out this other race, and that will help my crew get home. And it's like, really, Janeway? You I don't think you have any legs to stand there. I think your legs are gone and you have nothing to stand on. Especially since Voyager is like this super awesome long range high tech exploration ship, and the Equinox is this tiny science vessel, and it's just like, you guys, you and your high horses. I really liked the Equinox in a vacuum, but when you look at it next to all the other episodes, it's just like, what? What were they thinking?
Yeah.
To say nothing of the fact that they had never heard of this other starship that had been traveling ahead of them for who knows how long.
The thing is, though, with Voyager, when it was going through the previous series, they would meet a new species and it was like, your reputation precedes you. Mm-hmm. Yet, there was no reputation whatsoever of this far more untrustworthy ship that was genuinely in front of them.
I guess they were keeping a really low profile.
And I don't understand if you try and say, oh, they went a different course. How many courses are there straight home?
Well, not many. You know, space-time is curved. I looked at the, at one point, I looked at the, well, it was at least at one point, the official map of the Star Trek universe. And I figured out that it actually would have been faster. It's a slightly shorter trip for Voyager to have gone into the Gamma Quadrant. Sorry, go ahead.
I thought it's the same thing.
What?
I've seen that map. I saw the exact same thing.
Yeah, and it's like, it would have been shorter for Voyager to go to the Gamma Quadrant and find the Deep Space Nine wormhole and go through that. And, you know, they would have had to deal with the Dominion, but they wouldn't have had to deal with the Borg.
Yeah, you know, because they must have had a fairly good idea how big Borg space was.
And, well, I mean, they knew kind of where the Borg were, but if you go by, even though this doesn't make any sense, if you go by what Voyager says, they didn't actually know the Dominion existed. So that way should have been even more, like, you know, promising.
Yeah, and then they should have been absolutely screwed.
Yeah.
As they got there.
That would have been interesting. I mean, obviously they didn't do that because they didn't, you know, they can't be using Deep Space Nine's villains in Voyager, although they can apparently use TNG's villains. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was funny as I was looking at that map.
Though, whilst we're on Voyager, and don't get me wrong, I do really like Voyager. I love Voyager, but I wish they had never spent as much time on the Kazon.
Oh, yeah, the Kazon.
Oh, unworthy for assimilation, as I recall the Borg saying.
Yeah, unworthy for assimilation. How terrible do you have to be?
That's right, exactly.
Maybe that's a defense technique against the Borg that we haven't considered. Maybe if we just started acting really stupid, they would stop trying to assimilate us.
I just thought that you meant try and get them to assimilate a Kazon so it makes them all as thick as...
You know, that would also work. that is also worth trying.
Collective goes down every time you assimilate a Kazon.
Yeah, that's it. Whack 20 in there, they're done.
It's the same thing Fez is trying to get me to say about the Pakleds. You never see a Pakled Borg.
Yeah, well, the thing that makes me really sad about the Kazon is that Michael Piller apparently really thought the Kazon were a good idea, and I don't know. He was just they were removed from the show like over his objection, as I understand it.
Weren't they a good idea? They weren't even really an idea. It's like, let's just take away everything that makes the Klingons interesting and make it these guys that have no water.
Well, they have rocks on their heads. So that makes up for everything.
Yeah, but honestly, how can you turn around and try and justify that a species that is capable of interstellar travel has a low water supply?
Look, it's real dry in the Delta Quadrant, okay? They're going through a drought, a quadrant-wide drought. I mean,
it seemed pretty obvious to me, and this was just right out of the first episode, Caretaker, and this is in the same exact scene where Neelix double-crosses the Kazon when the water jugs are beamed down from Voyager, is that the Kazon dude who was in charge, I don't remember his name or what his title was, but he said that, you know, I'd be way more interested in this technology that you have that makes water appear out of thin air. You know, so it seems like transporter technology and replicator technology, at least in this particular part of this of the Delta Quadrant, didn't seem to be a thing that just anyone had. Now, take into account that they seem to also be settling on planets that were desert-like or had been devastated at some point through some either natural disaster or there's a bombardment of the planet, whatever it might be, I can understand how resources would be much more looked after more carefully by the citizens of this particular region, you know, especially if replicator and transport technology are new things for these people. You know, like when Neelix was first, when we first encountered Neelix in that first episode, Caretaker, he was like, beam, transporter, what? You know, and then later he was taking a bath. He was like, yeah, I'm living the high life here. You know, it didn't really seem like a stretch to me to think that. And definitely, I think, tried to set the stage early on with Michael Piller's idea that this is very much a different place that these people are in. This is going to be a lot rougher than life in the Alpha and Beta Quadrants, where the Federation is at.
The thing is, though, regardless of whether they had teleportation or replicator technology, it is basic now that we could recycle our waste to make it drinkable. So you could sustain like yourselves in, like, through space travel, literally just on basic science.
Or they could just go to one of the hundreds of planets that Voyager stopped at that had no one living on them and just go there. Those planets had water.
Yeah, and just be like, oh, this will be a good place to call home.
I mean, I guess they were camped out on the Ocampo planet because they were desperately hoping to gain access to the Caretaker's technology, but that didn't seem like that was ever going to happen.
Right. All this would work if we assumed that they had the wherewithal to go do these things, go to another planet, get water, for instance, but also look at how the society was structured. And I wish we had seen more of the Kazon, perhaps, in the way Michael Piller wanted them to be seen. From what I understand, it really sounds like he didn't really get his fair shot at it. It's really what it was, concerning the Kazon.
What did he want them to be?
Probably much more. I mean, who knows? We'll never find out because we never got to see it on the screen. But the impression I got, it was supposed to be, you know, warring kind of tribes, or tribes that are always uneasy with each other, and a lot of their materials and resources were put into dominating each other at the expense of their own, their own, you know, like, status of living, their own quality of life, as it were. So despite the fact that they may be an interstellar race and have the capability to build, you know, a device that can go, you know, collect water, purify it enough to drink, it doesn't mean that they're putting resources into that. You know, take, for example, a lot of the African countries that are over there across the Atlantic for us anyway, but down south for you guys. You know, a lot of them have the material resources to be able to build a lot of stuff, like a lot of material mineral resources, you know, as in the Congo, for instance. No one can get at it, though, because they're all constantly fighting each other.
Yeah, I mean, that could maybe have made that work if they put a lot of effort into it. But it's just like getting water is such a trivial task when you have like warp drive is the problem. You'd have to really explain why it's rare. I think it would have been much better if they'd been interested in like antimatter, because that's really, you know, hard to get, and they could be warring over that. Especially since we find out later that the Kazon stole all their technology from the Trabe. It could have been like the Kazon have this technology, but they can't duplicate it. So they could just be constantly attacking other ships trying to get antimatter to steal the ships that they have. That could have worked.
But then, do you think maybe that's supposed to be... Sorry, there you go.
No, go.
Say what?
Do you think maybe they were supposed to be a little more like the Hirogen? Because they were a tribal nomadic race that worked really well as an execution.
No, the Kazon really struck me more as having interest in territory, political conquest, and dominance over their, you know, regions and areas and their people and subjugating them. The Hirogen were really kind of at the opposite of that, where they didn't really care about political conquest so much as just carrying on tradition, you know, and that was very evident with their whole arc with holographic technology that they were getting mixed up with Voyager and such. So, I mean, they wanted to be able to, like, their society was trying to evolve out of that, and they're trying to find avenues to do it, and the holographic technology was a way to do that for them. But it was very much a, we need to have this in our society or our society will not function, which I think is very different from what Kazon society is, which still has roots in tradition. However, it seems like they don't have as much root in that tradition when it comes to taking on ambition and carrying on with those political goals.
I think the Kazon just
they're only better cared about with their names.
Yeah, they've got them. I mean, I think
earning their names, like the episode that Aaron Eisenberg was in, where they start off with one name and then earning a uniform is like earning a name. And then you remember this, or am I the only one that remembers that?
I remember that episode.
I remember.
Yeah, that's like the only thing they've still held on to. Everything else is just give us water.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, after hearing you try, Bob, like bring up valid points of trying to justify the Kazon, there are a lot of similarities between their culture and how they lived, and how the Mirror Universe was portrayed for the Federation.
With the Terran Empire, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And I really don't think how... I just don't understand how a society like that would ever actually really function if you're constantly doing underhanded deals behind each other's backs. Well, saying that, that's the society we live in today, but...
True. It's a cycle, is what it is, where you're constantly living in fear. You know, it's a Machiavellian thing where you're constantly having this cycle of fear perpetuate your, you know, tradition. And where the Mirror Universe fell apart, as was explained in some of the DS9 episodes, was when Spock tried to make a bunch of reforms and do it in a relatively short amount of time. You know, change comes slowly, and it has to be slow so that everyone can adjust and get educated and such, and to make sure the transition is good to whatever the new system might be. The reason the Mirror Universe fell apart was because those changes came, but everyone else was used to the old ways of living in fear. And when they found that they no longer had to live in fear of someone else, they then turned to their own strength and made others live in fear of them. So that's
actually I don't think that was the problem. I think the problem, it sounded to me from the way that Intendant Kira, and, you know, take whatever she says with a grain of salt, but it sounded the way she was describing it was that the reforms actually worked really well. The problem was just that there were still other hostile aliens around. And apparently
the hostile aliens were getting the crap kicked out of them by the Terran Empire. When the Terran Empire suddenly lost their teeth, you bet they turned around and went, hey, here's our opportunity to not, you know, ever have to live in fear again. And obviously they enacted their own agenda on top of that, as we had the alliance with the Klingons, the Cardassians, and whoever else. But that's really why the Terran Empire fell apart, is because they had it going one way, and then suddenly they swung it around the other way and said, okay, here's how we're going to do this. And being that for, you know, hundreds of years up to that point, it had been one way, and suddenly, bam, we've got this opportunity to go ahead and strike back, take back what is ours, you know, by force. Let's do it. Let's go ahead and make ourselves great, because that's how they were great. Let's do this ourselves.
Speaking of races, because I want to get back to the best races in Star Trek, the Cardassians, for me, went from being really boring, because when they first showed up, I was like, these guys seem kind of like Romulans that without cloaking devices. Mm-hmm. And then as they went further into the series, they really got a lot more development and got a lot more interesting. And I really liked them by the end. Like, I was a huge fan of their really weird family dynamics. I think this was on The Wilderness, actually, JD, where you guys pointed out that they have this incredibly strong family unit, but apparently that only applies to the immediate family. So, like, if your parents die, you can't get adopted by your uncle or something. It seems to be the implication, because they're like, children without parents have no status. It's like, well, what about their extended family? Do they have no one they could go live with? So I thought that was an interesting contradiction that they had going on.
Yeah, that sounds like something we'd say.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was you guys who said that.
Yeah, a little while ago. I don't remember what we were talking about, but yeah, that sounds like us.
For a race that did take such pride in family, I did find it amazing that they children were also a case of great dishonor. And like, as soon as they either had no parents or like that case, what was the episode where disgrace one of like the Cardassian politicians, they mm-hmm. let his kid be raised by a Bajoran family.
Cardassians. No,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Literally the name of an episode is Cardassians.
That is the name of the
I thought I had said something wrong.
No, it's from season 2. It's called Cardassians. It's just the name of it.
Yeah.
Garak.
Went into that name.
mm-hmm. They were like, what is this? They were like, we could name this episode Garak and Bashir Investigate a Plot. And they're like, no, that's too literal.
About Cardassians. Yeah, just call it Cardassians.
I was sad we never followed up on that War Orphan storyline, because it seemed like Garak was like kind of close to caring a little bit, and I thought maybe there was going to be a follow-up, and we never did.
Oh, there are a lot of things that should have been followed up that weren't. Let's say Tom Riker and leave it at that.
We're going to get you out of prison, Tom, I promise. 15 years later, Tom Riker is like half dead in a Cardassian labor camp, and he's like, God, I hope she didn't forget about me.
That's the one hope he's holding on to. Like, some people hold on to religion. He's holding on to Nerys will come and save me, and then she doesn't.
It's probably a novel.
So sad.
So would you have been happier if they had just rounded that off by... when the Dominion joined with the Cardassians, you just saw a Jem'Hadar walk into a cell and shoot Riker through the head.
No, I think
closure. That's all I wanted.
If Riker had shown up in one of the numerous episodes where they had to infiltrate Cardassia, or if they just made a mention, or since in Star Trek any problem caused by a transporter is fixed by a transporter, when he beamed over, the transporter should have malfunctioned and just disintegrated him.
Irony.
Because, you know, created by a transporter, destroyed by a transporter. I think that's how it has to go.
Pack demon from whence the oblivion you came.
shall not pass through the transporter.
Oh my goodness.
So Bob, what would you say was your favorite species?
My favorite species, or what I think the best species is?
Okay, good.
There's a distinction between those two.
Yes, there really is. Okay, then, best species.
The best species, I think, is probably the Romulans. Throughout the entirety of Trek, they've been pretty consistent in that they are a parallel to what the Federation is with some differences. And they, I think, make a really good opponent for the Federation, being that we see the show from the Federation perspective a lot of the time, you know, being that, you know, the humans, or the main cast is human a lot of the time, and they're dealing with their trials and tribulations and all that stuff. Then on the other end of it, we have, you know, the Romulans, which thankfully I can say it's kind of like the more devious version of the Federation, because they've been so consistent from TOS all the way through DS9 and Voyager. In the one episode we got to see them, or actually no, two episodes we got to see them.
Mm-hmm. And they're stealing.
That's what I would say the best race is in Star Trek, is because of their consistency. Klingons would be my follow up to that as being the best, but unfortunately they have had kind of a lot of different incarnations over time, I think, from being just another kind of aggressive species in TOS to being kind of like space Vikings, as Orin has, I know, called them before in our show in DS9. So we see a lot of their culture has come out and they've developed, but at times it kind of feels a little schizophrenic. So that's why they don't get the number one. I think Romulans do.
And the Romulans really do. To be honest, I think what works most about them is just the fact that they don't reveal too much. Yeah. They leave enough mystery there that you're always never quite sure.
I mean, heaven knows the two movies we had actually went into detail about the Romulans didn't do them any favors. we had Nemesis with Shinzon and that whole experience. And then we had the 2009 movie, which again is a good movie, but it didn't really do the Romulans any favors. They were acting kind of, I don't know, I would say like the way I would expect bad Klingons to act, just like blindly pursuing this rage and not really talking to anybody or acting sneaky. And they have like the grief tattoos. I don't know what's going on with that. And the fact that their grief tattoos is actually a retcon that they came up with afterwards, and it still doesn't explain why his wife has them in that one picture. But, I mean, yeah, I think that the Romulans work very well because they're so mysterious. But even that said, I do want to know way more about them. I was really sad that the Romulan from The Search wasn't allowed to be Deep Space Nine anymore because she had to go be on Voyager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Martha Hack.
Say what?
Martha Hackett was her name, the actress.
Was that her name? Yeah. Even though, I mean, Seska was definitely the best villain I think Voyager ever had. I would have preferred her on Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine will always be my favorite.
Yep, absolutely. But you want to know what my favorite species is, though, which I'm sure is the follow-up question. The Borg, prior to Voyager.
Yeah.
Because up until that point with TNG, or pretty much Star Trek, up until, you know, Q Who in Season 2, we didn't have... the Federation didn't have a bear to fight, mm-hmm. necessarily. Because there's a bear... What I mean when I say bear is that a bear is a much bigger, tougher animal creature than you are. Now, you have the capability of taking the bear down through some ingenuity and guile. You can certainly do that. You're not going to be able to wrestle the bear. Well, you know, maybe some people can wrestle bears. I'm not one of these guys. But if you try to wrestle the bear, you're going to lose, is the thing. And when confronted with this bear, the Federation, or well, the crew of the Enterprise, really, anyway, you know, through some ingenuity and a little bit of guile, managed to take down the bear. Right, and what makes it a bear is for them is that it is so different and so alien from anything that they had encountered so far. Now, sure, they had alien races which had various bits of culture and political history and treaties and such that they'd worked out with all these different races around the Federation, but it was so different to meet the Borg, because the Borg were just literally this, you know, creature that consumed things as it went along. It checked stuff out, sniffed this, sniffed that, ate that. You know, stuff. It's stuff like that. It was just so different to meet this spacefaring race that wasn't actually a cosmozoan life form at all, but was a collection of humanoids, but were all part of a hive mind of some sort. You know, originally they were supposed to be, you know, like insects or something like that, right? That's kind of where the whole idea of hive mind came from. Where even in the episode Conspiracy at the end of season one, right? Season one, yeah. And end of season one, you know, there was some doc going around like, hey, these are going to be the Borg, where these little bugs were at the in conspiracy were going to be the Borg originally, which would have been a cool idea, but I think it was a better move to make the Borg what they are, or were anyway, in TNG, which was just this hive mind collective that was that worked very different differently than any other entity that they had encountered so far. That's what made him the bear for the Federation.
So what, regardless of Voyager, how did, as your favorite species, how did you feel about the Queen?
Yeah.
Well, I guess let me qualify as that I dislike First Contact for that introduction as well, because it made it personal to the point of making it mano a mano with, you know, Picard and the Queen in First Contact. It was way better that it was just
a hive mind.
A hive mind where it was, you know, like Picard had suffered his bear attack in, you know, the end of season 3 and the beginning of season 4 with Best of Both Worlds. And he, you know, he has to heal over time from having been mauled by this bear is what it was. And when it was no longer a bear, but so much that he had been, you know, just accosted by an individual, it kind of all fell apart. You know, it's just like, you know, this isn't really all that cool anymore, guys. You know, it was way cooler when we didn't have someone pulling the strings from behind with the Borg, with the Queen, who had her own ambitions and goals. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't that cool anymore, you know, to me anyway. You know, I hold First Contact in high regard as a really good, you know, Trek movie, and that there's a lot of action going on. We had a little bit of Trek history, which I'm always down for hearing about, you know, the timeline of Trek. But the Queen was a mistake, I feel. It would have been way better to leave her out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, just a little bit of behind-the-scenes information, the original idea for the Best of Both Worlds was that Picard was going to be combined with Data. The Borg were going to do that for some reason.
What?
And that was the original idea they had, because they knew they wanted Picard to turn into a machine man, and one of their ideas was having Picard, the Borg were going to fuse Picard and Data, and they were thinking about it, and apparently they just couldn't figure out a reason for the Borg to do it, so they dropped that storyline.
I would. Gorgeous. That's really dumb.
Personally, I think they missed a golden opportunity.
By the sounds of it, they just regurgitated that story for Tuvix.
Yeah.
Yep. Which I actually like Tuvix in that regard, even though it's a Neelix episode. But I do. I like the moral dilemma they have at the end.
It's, you know, brilliant.
The more that we go on about Voyager, people talking about Voyager, the more I think that there was a bin somewhere at Paramount that was just a bad ideas bin that Star Trek writer material would go into. And then Voyager would go into it and rummage through it and go, hey, what can we pull out of here?
Everything.
This is a thing that had happened at some point. But anyway, I feel we have enough Voyager hitting all things Trek. Do we want to get to least favorite races or the worst races?
Yeah, go on then.
One. You want me to lead off with it? I think the worst was, there's such a long list. you know, despite all my points about the Kazon earlier, I do think that they're certainly one of the worst. Pardon?
The Tac-Tac, I believe they were called, the ones that used speech and hand signals to communicate with
each
other?
No, they're right behind the Klingons is the best, actually.
okay.
Their interpretive dance.
yeah. I don't know, come back to me. I'll have to pass for now. I'll have to think about that one, because I have so many in mind.
I already said the Kazon, but I'm gonna take a second slot, and I might... I mean, and we talked about the Ocampa, and just from a personal standpoint, I really hated the Skreeans from Sanctuary, just because
that episode and that whole species. I just want them all to go away.
It was just like in that sequence when the Bajoran Council is talking about how you can't live on our planet because there's not enough food. I'm just imagining it's like, guys, you know, you have replicators. Food's not really that much of an issue. I'm imagining this coming up in some Bajoran meeting and then being like, do you want to live next to these people? And they're like, no. And it's like, no one tell them we have replicators, guys. There's not enough food. Wink, wink. That's the reason they can't live here. And it's just, I mean, this is just a pet peeve of mine, but a personal pet peeve. But I really hate the way sci-fi does matriarchal societies. Because in matriarchal societies in sci-fi, the women are always, like, incredibly domineering and just, like, in your face and annoying as nobody's business. And the men are always these kind of shrunken, almost ape-like creatures who are completely dependent on the women to take care of them. And it's like, guys, is that how you think? I mean, our society is a patriarchal society. Is that how our society works? Like, is that what you think is going on here? And it's just, it's terrible, and I hate it. And they do that, like, every time. They did it in Angel 1. Ugh, screens. God damn it. And they have that hairdo. What's up with that weird, like, wall of hair that they have going on? I don't like anything about the screens.
It's probably my least, like, the episode I hate the most out of anything in DS9. I can't stand that episode.
It maybe isn't as bad as the Fun Police episode where they go to Ryza and some guys try to arrest them for having too much fun.
Oh, no, that is true.
That episode's also really bad. But Deep Space Nine, like, I mean, Deep Space Nine's got a couple of bad ones, but it is my favorite.
That's really Wayne? Weird because the amount of times that I hear people slag off that episode, I never actually considered the Ryza episode to be too awful.
Wayne, you defend the motion picture, so what do you know?
Wayne, come on, that opinion is different than ours. but Wayne, what's your least favorite species? I'm going to put you on the spot.
My least favorite species. Probably, that's the thing. Obvious choices is either the Kazon or the Pakled. But then. To be honest, for me, it would probably be the Bolians. I just don't like blue people.
You've broken Fez's heart.
What did the Bolians ever do to you?
You don't like blue people.
I wanted to see more of them. You've broken Fez's heart. He loved Mr. Mott.
Mott.
Hang on, let's bring Fez in. Fez, say your bit.
Fuck you. So there's no swearing allowed.
I'm going to take that as a sign as the language barrier is down at this hour of the Trek Mate Pod-a-thon.
I evolved and all of these excuses and explicit rating.
That's right. It's your own fault for inviting me and Fez along.
Oh, dear. It's always nice to get some in-depth discussion from Fez.
I just want to say, I really like the Bolians. I would have liked to have seen more of them, or even a regular character that was a Bolian.
Mott.
Not Mott. You go back to playing your game. Shut up.
You know who the worst race in Star Trek is? The worst race in Star Trek are humans. Goddamn humans. They're so, like, they're all violent and all, like, so many jerks are human. God damn.
And Holding isn't there. Oh, yeah, oh my god.
Picard spreading the Starfleet gospel and explaining to everyone why they're wrong. But I actually have to get going, guys. I appreciate you inviting me on, but I must depart. I must escape.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, guys. In case anyone doesn't know where they can catch you, where can they find All Things Trek and catch up with you guys?
Bob, you tell them.
All right, so we have our main website, which is http://www.allthingstrek.com. You can catch all of our episodes on there, as well as Tales from the DMZ, which Oren actually produced. It's kind of a fan fiction that he's done. Which, Oren, are we going to get any more of those at all?
That's why we're not allowed to talk about it anymore. It's a source of shame.
Oh, okay. All right, so first rule of Tales from the DMZ is we don't talk about Tales from the DMZ?
Yes.
All right. Also, you can catch us on trekradio.net, which we're on Saturdays, 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern. I have no idea what that is for the UK because I maths the dumb. So you guys are 8 hours ahead, is that right?
Something like that.
I have no idea. To be honest, I've screwed up so many time zones when I've been arranging this thing. I keep telling people wrong times.
It's 7 or 8 hours, so it's either 8 p.m. GMT or 9 p.m. GMT is when you can hear us live. But you can always catch our episode on our website or on iTunes, which is All Things Trek. Also, if you want to shoot us an email, we have allthingstrek@hotmail.com. We did have Twitter at one point, but Oren decided that it was the devil, and we don't have it anymore.
I really hate Twitter, I have to say. And we weren't really using it, and like I don't think anyone found us through Twitter. So, I mean, I know a lot of people really like it, and it's useful for them, but all right. So thank you so much for inviting us.
No, you're more than welcome, and thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
I am always down for raising money to help kids.
And don't think I'm not going to bother you guys to be on TrekMate at some point in the future.
Oh, by all means, Stu. I've really enjoyed having the chance to chat with you.
Oren, you're going to bother them about being on their own show?
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be like, hey.
I just want to be clear on that you're going to be bothering them about them being on their own show. I just want to be clear about that point.
definitely. Thank you so much for joining us, guys. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Right.
See you around. So, what we're going to do now, JD, is we're going to take a quick musical interlude, and then we'll be joined. Sorry?
That sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. It, in all honesty, it's a toilet break.
Yes.
So, let's do that, and when we come back, we'll be joined by the legend that is Rick Moyer.
Can't wait.
What, you meant me?
See you on the other side.
This is Captain Catherine Janeway of the Federation Starship Voyager. What is the nature of your emergency?
Janeway was a captain from the Federation, chasing folks in the Badlands. Janeway got her ship clear into the Delta Quadrant in the caretaker's hands. Get back! Get back! Get back to the Alpha Quadrant! Get back! Get back! Get back to the Alpha Quadrant! Get back, Janeway!
Janeway to Bridge, report.
We're experiencing power fluctuations on Deck 6, Captain. Mr. Tuvok is investigating.
Keep me informed.
Despite Starfleet protocol, I don't have faith in justice, sir.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Ma'am is acceptable to crunch, but I prefer captain.
Janeway of the Starship Voyager.
Go home! That's right!
Get back! Get back! Get back to the Alpha Quadrant! Get back! Get back! Get back to the Alpha Quadrant! Trying to get you back. You gotta pick it. Be back, get back. Ooh, get back.
Janeway out.